Case number 11-5102, Abdul Razak Ali, detainee, appellant versus Barack Obama, president et al. Ms. Gorman for the appellant, Ms. Foster for the appellee.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning. We'll start in open court, and only if necessary we'll go into closed session.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Somehow I do not think that what happened below in this case is what the Supreme Court had in mind in Boumediene, when the Supreme Court held that the prisoners at Guantanamo are entitled to a meaningful opportunity to demonstrate that they are being wrongly held. What happened below was not about any meaningful opportunity for my client. A more accurate description would be hide the ball. The government throws a few morsels of information our way, but once it looks like you're getting actually close to finding the ball, they have no shortage of shenanigans up their collective sleeves to keep you from actually reaching the ball. And I suggest to this court that this case begs a lot of questions. One of the questions, for example, is why are we all poring over an interview, an interrogation from 2002 of a man who is still being detained at Guantanamo? And I'm talking about ISN 707, Mr. Uthman. A man who...
Raise an interesting question. What is the gap between 2002 and his plea, which is the source of information the government relies on?
The plea, I believe, was entered in 2010.
And your only argument against the reliability of the plea is based on the proposition that it was part of a plea?
The reliability of his plea is actually an issue that the government brought up. I'm arguing the reliability of the detainee himself, and that information only came about when his plea information was released.
Well, it's part of the information, right?
Correct. The part that shows that he was being tortured right at the time that he made the statements about my client in 2002.
But not at the time he made his plea.
No.
But you just said it was 8 years later.
Yeah, I believe it was 2010. But as I suggest to this court, the question here begs the question about why we have nothing more from Mr. Uthman about my client or about whoever this Usama al-Jazairi is in the record from the government from 2002. Has no one in this great government of ours ever gone back to Mr. Uthman and said to him, who is this Usama al-Jazairi? Who is this person that was in the photo that you looked at in August of 2002? Why did you describe him as a driver in Algeria? Has anyone ever gone back and actually showed a photo of my client to Mr. Uthman and asked him if this is the same person he was talking about? If so, none of that's in the record. Apparently, no one cares. And apparently, the government knows that. It's inconceivable to me that the identity of Mr. Usama al-Jazairi is so very important to our government that our very, and I mean this honestly, our very competent FBI would not have had a lot of follow-up questions for him about, is this the person you were talking about? Is this my client? I mean, 11 years have passed since he's made that statement. In my humble opinion, this case is really about whether or not the government has shown that the petitioner is the person Mr. Uthman was referring to when he talked about a person in a photo and said, that man is Mr. Usama al-Jazairi, that's how I know him, and he's a driver in Algeria. And something that's really interesting to look at, and this is from the two interviews that are part of the public record, the interview from August 11th, 2002, and September 14th, 2002, and you can find those at the record at 247 to 55 and 256. And when Mr. Uthman goes through all of those many photos that he's looking at, he tells the interrogators where he knows them from. Oh, I know this one from Claden. I know this one from the guest house. This one came in the guest house at this other time. He gets to this photo, which I contend is not of my client anyway, but he doesn't even describe that person as someone who has been at the guest house, who he's met in Afghanistan, who he has somehow met along the way. His only identification is a nickname and a phrase that he was a driver in Algeria, whatever that means. And we know that Mr. Uthman does know someone named Usama al-Jazairi. We know that he knows that he traveled with someone with that name. He doesn't say that this person in the photo is someone he traveled with. And he also doesn't say that this person that he was at a guest house with is the person in the photo. And more importantly, he never says that the person in this photo is my client. The government makes that leap by looking at the al-Suri diary. If you look at the interview from Mr. Uthman from August 11th, and again, I'm looking at the public version of that document. Mr. Uthman, and I'm looking at page, actually I'm looking at the cleaner version, which is the government's version, and that's at Joint Appendix 1683 to 91. And when you get to page 1687, which is the part where he talks about this photo that's being shown to him, he identifies the person in the photo as Usama al-Jazairi. And the government says, the interrogator says, this person is known to investigators as Abdul Razak. And again, I know I went over this in my brief in great detail, but my client was never known to interrogators at Guantanamo or at Bagram as Abdul Razak. And the photo that was shown to him was not a photo of my client. And so when he's talking about this person, we know also that it's not a person that was in the guest house with him, because he doesn't say this person was in the guest house with him. He does say that about many of the other individuals in here. And you can just go up a couple of lines on that same page, and he identifies someone that he first met in jail. He met someone else who he just met in the guest house a week ago who joined him. He's not shy about giving details about the individuals that he has met on his travels and in his life in Afghanistan and at the guest house and at the prison. And I'd like to then point you to the second interrogation of Mr. Uthman, because that's 1 month after this first one. And again, Mr. Uthman is being shown all of these photos. And again, Mr. Uthman is saying that he's going to give as much information as he can about the individuals in the photos. And he's shown again the photo that the government claims is the one that was shown to him in August. And now he doesn't mention this one as having the nickname, Usama al-Jazairi. He doesn't mention him even as being a driver in Algeria. He mentions him as someone he first met in jail in Pakistan after the raid. So what we know from the record is that this is very confused. And that what we also know from the record is that Mr. al-Jazairi, whoever he is not my client. And I would just one more thing on Mr. Usama al-Jazairi, because there is something in the record that does point to who he is, and that's an interrogation of ISN 215. And you'll see that at the record at the Joint Appendix at 269. And Mr. ISN 215 is someone that the interrogators talk about as being very willing to talk about who he knows, and very willing to...
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm just concerned that we're getting into some information that might not be included in the public record. Can we discuss this further?
Yeah, we can discuss this in the closed session.
Okay. It is from a public document.
We can discuss it in the closed session.
I'm going to save the remaining time if there's no questions for rebuttal. Thank you.
Foster.
May it please the Court, Sydney Foster for the government. Your Honors, the district court properly concluded that petitioner is part of Abu Zubaydah's force and thus lawfully detained under the authorization for use of military force. Petitioner attacks several factual findings made by the district court. Those findings are not clearly erroneous, and those challenges don't come close to undermining the key factual findings that were at play in this case. And I'd like to address a few issues that came up just now in petitioner's counsel's argument. But first, I just want to emphasize the key facts that were found by the district court that support his conclusion that petitioner is lawfully detained. As an initial matter, petitioner admits to having been captured together with Abu Zubaydah himself at a safe house where he admits that he had been staying for over 2 weeks. And the district court found that at that very time, Abu Zubaydah was gathering he was organizing the individuals who were living in the safe house for their next terrorist operations, that there was training going on in the areas of explosives, electronics, computers, and English language. And we have other evidence that it was that safe house was occupied by individuals who were all jihadis, who were some of the more serious, important people involved with al-Qaeda. So this is that evidence alone was enough in the district court's view, and this the district court was correct in concluding that petitioner is part of Abu Zubaydah's force. The district court relied on additional evidence that further supported its conclusion, and the district court's findings with respect to this additional evidence is also well supported by the record, and there was no clear error. As an initial matter, petitioner is listed in the al-Siri diary under the name Osama al-Jazairi in an entry that is dated just a few days before the capture of petitioner in Abu Zubaydah and others. This court in Barhumi considered the very same diary and recognized that inclusion in that list is highly probative of one's membership in Abu Zubaydah's group. In addition to that evidence from the al-Siri diary, we have additional evidence that petitioner was actually actively engaged in Abu Zubaydah's terrorist training program.
Isn't whether the diary is authentic, I mean, the court has said in a different case that it is, it's whether or not al-Jazairi is this petitioner. It's whether or not the person that you're pointing to in the diary is this petitioner.
That's right. And the district court made a factual...
So really saying that al-Jazairi is listed in the diary doesn't answer that question.
That's right, Your Honor. And the district court made a factual finding that petitioner did go by the name Osama al-Jazairi.
Based on what?
Based on the identification by...
The photo.
Right, the photo identification by Uthman that you were just discussing with petitioner's counsel. It's also corroborated by...
So if there's a serious problem with the photo identifications, then you can't ride on the diary.
That's right. If there were no photo identification, then we would not be making that argument. That is correct. Okay. I will note, though, that the photo identification is corroborated by the fact that Osama al-Jazairi is listed as one of the 13 permanent members of the force in an entry that's just a few days before the raid took place. And so it's not surprising that someone who was picked up would have that name. And also petitioner at this point now claims that he is Algerian, and al-Jazairi does mean Algerian. So that identification is certainly corroborated by other evidence, but yes, that's correct. But the important point here is that the district court made a factual finding that identification was credible, and that's
but
fully supported.
But only if the photo identification is credible.
That's correct, Your Honor. But petitioners,
the fact that the district court said it, I mean, we're entitled to know based on what?
Absolutely, Your Honor. But my point is that the district court's conclusion that petitioner was went by Osama al-Jazairi based on that identification and the other evidence I've just discussed
well,
is not
clearly
erroneous.
Well, the other evidence, I don't know how that doesn't, that it's a viable name doesn't mean that it's this person.
But I'm just saying it corroborates it. We wouldn't be relying
on
that.
Doesn't corroborate it, that it's a viable name. It's whatever. It's all about the photo identification.
With respect to the evidence about Osama al-Jazairi, it does hinge on the photo identification, but Uthman had very good reason to know exactly who petitioner was. As petitioner himself admits, he lived with Uthman at the safe house for the entirety of his stay, which was over 2 weeks long, and in fact, petitioner admits that he spent the night in Uthman's room several times. So Uthman had good reason to know the name of petitioner. Likewise, you know, the Al-Siri diary establishes that Uthman had spent a great deal of time with the person identified in the diary as Usama al-Jazairi. They had traveled together the last several months. So he had good reason to know who Usama al-Jazairi is as well. Based on...
Ali picked up in this particular guest house, right? And we had evidence independent of Uthman about training going on for a substantial period in that guest house. And I thought we had a concession by Ali that he spent 2 weeks, something like that,
correct,
in that guest house prior to being picked up.
Correct.
So that's... And we have his concession that he went to Afghanistan to fight against the U.S.
That's correct. That's correct. We have a wealth of evidence here, even if without even relying on the identification of petitioner as Usama al-Jazairi. Critically, and that was very important to the district court, a petitioner did admit just within 48 hours of his capture that he had gone to Afghanistan to fight in the war. And that was an interview that the district court credited, and that was not clearly erroneous. In addition, you know, the district court noted there were a number of false exculpatory statements that were made by petitioner, and that further supported the district court's decision as well. So that's right. Without the identification, there is certainly no, there's still an old wealth of evidence. And as the district court also held, that just the presence in the safe house alone was enough to support petitioner's detainability, given what was going on in the safe house and the significance of the
given
individuals.
That.
What's that?
Given your clause, given.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But as the district court noted, and as this court has held in cases like al-Sabri and the district courts have recognized, when you have a significant terrorist leader like Abu Zubaydah present in a house, that makes it much more likely that those who are around him are, you know, trusted individuals who are part of the, you know, a terrorist organization. We have that. We have a lot of additional evidence about the significant that these individuals were all jihadis, were the more serious important people at al-Qaeda. And again, as I said, we have a lot of evidence about the kind of terrorist training that was going on at the house. And some additional evidence I can go into in the closed session about that indicates that, you know, this was acting as a safe house. It was not just a guest house, a place that, you know, a weary traveler could rest overnight. It was a hideout, and it was being used as a training facility. To the extent, too, that this court reaches, finds that it has jurisdiction.
What do you mean by training facility? Or do you want to save that?
No, I can address it in part, Your Honor. The Al-Siri diary and other sources that I could address later explain that there was extensive training going on at the safe house in the topics of electronics and explosives and the English language and computers. And we can address, you know, more evidence in a closed session if necessary. But I also note that to the extent that there's any concern about the Uthman interview based on the post-judgment motion that was filed by petitioner, and to the extent that this court concludes it has jurisdiction over the order denying that motion, then we have the additional evidence that Judge Williams was referencing, which is the stipulation that Uthman entered into as part of his military commission plea. That stipulation was entered into in January 2011, which is far, far removed from, of course, the claims of mistreatment. And in that stipulation, Uthman stated that as facts that he agreed were true and that were provable beyond a reasonable doubt, that he had been captured at the safe house with Abu Zubaydah and petitioner himself, whom he specifically identified, and that the safe house was being used as a terrorist training facility and as a hideout. And he further corroborated the prior information he had provided against petitioner about petitioners actually being involved in the English training. I'd like to make one side note, too, about something petitioner's counsel made that's on a related point. Petitioner's counsel, I think, said that in the interview with Uthman in August 2002, where he identifies petitioner as Usama al-Jazairi, that he doesn't talk about petitioner, or sorry, he does not talk about Usama al-Jazairi as having been someone who was at the house, but I think actually if you look at the next page after the page that has the identification, I believe the page with the identification is at J1684. If you look at the next page, I think it's 1685, then you'll see that he describes some activities at the safe house, and he says that he and Usama al-Jazairi were taking English classes at the safe house. So it's simply not correct that this Usama al-Jazairi, who was identified in that interview, was not somehow associated with the safe house. If the court has no further questions, then we would just ask that you affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Gorman, you want to use some rebuttal time?
Yes, please. When I was starting to talk about ISN 215, the government said I was getting into information that was classified. So I wanted to assure the court that I have the public version of ISN 215's interrogation, and that's what I was referring to in my initial statement. And ISN 215 said that he knew an Abu Usama al-Jazairi, that he was an instructor at either the Farouk or the Khaldun camp. And he said Abu Usama al-Jazairi has blonde hair. And I raise this because the government still has never shown a photo of my client, but I've met my client many times over the years, and I can say as an officer of the court that my client does not have blonde hair. I want to answer a couple of issues that just Judge Williams raised, because Judge Williams talked about the training that supposedly went on in this house. And the training that went on in this house that's alluded to by the government actually comes from the Al-Suri diary, which, as this court knows, I'm contesting as being anything accurate. And also, the fact that Mr. Uthman in 2011, and I was off a year, stipulated as an out ticket to getting out of Guantanamo everything that he was saying was true and that there was training going on, that's not a stipulation that I had any opportunity to question him about or to talk about my client. As far as I'm concerned, that was just something, a statement he made so that he could get out of Guantanamo. And I don't blame him for it, but it's not true when it comes to my client. And when the government says that my client was taking...
Basically, hearsay is admissible, and it's up to the reasonable discretion of the district court to decide what value it should be given.
I understand that, Your Honor, and I would suggest to this court that it should be given no value in my client's case. We had no opportunity to talk with him. We've had no...
That's always going to be true with respect to hearsay, right? That's
correct.
That's why we have a rule against hearsay law.
Right. Your Honor, also, you talked about the fact that my client had training in Afghanistan, and my client has never had any...
Well, that's rather going to Afghanistan to fight or saying that he had.
Okay. But none of that is true. My client was never in Afghanistan until he was taken to Afghanistan.
I'm sorry, you didn't say when he was picked up that he had been, that he went to Afghanistan to fight, or that he was heading to Afghanistan to fight?
No, Your Honor.
No.
And the reason that there's confusion in the record about this is because in the record, the government has put in an admission by a person who was arrested at a different guest house. And I go through this in my brief in quite detail, but the long and the short of it is that there were a number of guest houses raided that night.
I understand this issue with respect to the guest houses.
Right. And the statement about the person who went to Afghanistan was someone who was arrested at a different guest house. It was not my client. And the government keeps trying to say that must be my client. He used this name Abdul Razak. And as I pointed out in the record, the government has never referred to my client as Abdul Razak except in this case. And if you look at the list of all of the detainees at Guantanamo, you'll see that there are 9 Abdul Razaks. It's a common name, but none of those 9 are my client. That name is not one that's referring to my client. It was referring to someone that was picked up at a different guest house at that same night. And we know from Mr. Uthman that he was in a jail cell after the raid that night with an Abdul Razak, but it was not my client. It was a different Abdul Razak, and that's also in the record.
I'm sorry, I'm just again concerned that we're getting into materials.
Okay. Ms. Gorman, can we go into closed session?
We can, Your Honor.
Okay, why don't we take a break, and the courtroom will be prepared for the closed session.